Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CORBETTREPORT.com. Corbett, two T's, report.com. James writes, publishes, does podcasts from Japan, been living there since, I believe, 2004. Started the Corbett Report in 2007. And you find James is getting traction. We find him referenced in other documents and other people's publications, and he's been recognized as a source of interesting and intelligent information. And we talked about this, I think it was last week, maybe the week before. But it is amazing that one man, really, in this internet age, you can actually achieve things almost all by yourself. People will find you if you have talent and something to say. So, hello, James. How are you doing?
I am doing well. It is amazing that we can do this, what we're doing right now, talking halfway around the world instantaneously through the internet. And it is interesting, I think, how the technology to enable this arises at just the very time where it seems to be most needed. There is so much groundbreaking stuff going on right now that is not getting widely reported on anywhere else that I think, what we're doing right here is very needed, especially this week. There's been some incredible stories coming through the news wires.
I agree with you. And let's see if we, I don't know which stories you necessarily think are incredible, but for me, the story of the Texas gold bullion depository strikes me as one of the most important stories I've ever had a chance to report on. Now, do you agree with that? Is that on your list, or you have a different list?
Actually, I have a different list, but I'd be interested to hear your take on the gold bullion story.
Well, the whole idea, I'm in the process of reading the law, and I believe it's about 8,000 words, and I've gone through maybe 2,000. So I've got a ways to go before I get through the law, but last Friday, Governor Abbott here in Texas, he signed off on a law that would establish a gold bullion depository for Texas gold. It'll be a place not only where the government can park its gold, and they claim they're going to withdraw $1 billion worth of gold from New York and perhaps the Fed or one of the other bullion banks in New York. They're going to pull that billion back to Texas. They're going to make proviso for people like myself to open gold accounts in that bank that I can use to write checks, for example, and pay my bills off that gold account. The law specifically says that the gold may not be seized by legislative act, which means the state legislature won't be able to grab it. And people who've written articles prior to this, they say that the feds will be resisted. You come down here, feds, you come down, try to get our gold. You're going to have a problem. We're not going to just roll over. And this is in conjunction. The governor has ordered the Texas militia, the Texas militia, for lack of a better term, to keep an eye on the people from the federal government who are engaged in Jade Helm. All right? Now, this is the sort of thing that's pushing us in a direction where we might have a gold and silver-based currency, again, or at least the use of gold and silver, readily available for the people of Texas if they care to partake, and not so long from now. I regard this as an enormous, I've been advocating that we go back to gold and silver for I don't know, probably 2 decades. But I didn't exactly think it was going to happen, at least not until the whole thing blew up. And in the aftermath of a national collapse, some of we might get gold and silver. But now it looks, oh my gosh, Texas is going to do it. And I live in Texas, for what it's worth. I'm pleased. I'm proud. This strikes me. And it's the sort of thing where Austin, they will hold gold for other people in foreign countries, right? Other entities. And I'm thinking to myself, where would you like to store your gold? In Hong Kong, Singapore, Canada, Switzerland, or Texas? a lot of people are going to say Texas. And you build this depository in Austin, and then I'm going to guess that it will spawn a bunch of businesses just on the outskirts of the of this depository that are dealing, wheeling and dealing in gold. We might see, it's not inconceivable. I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but it's not inconceivable that we might be able to give the Shanghai Gold Exchange a run for their money. Now, do I predict that? No. But not impossible. Texas is a funny place. Strange things can happen. I mean, it's Texas is as strange as China. So in any case, that's basically the story of the Texas Gold Depository as I understand it right now. And it's something. It's important. And it's important because there's rumors. John F. Kennedy, he proposed to get rid of Federal Reserve notes shortly before he was assassinated. And some people believe that was the real reason for his assassination. He was tinkering with the money system. Saddam Hussein started selling Iraqi crude for euros rather than fiat dollars. And Iraq was invaded, ruined, destroyed, and Saddam Hussein hanged by the neck until dead. Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, wealthiest country in Africa, proposed to create a pan-African gold currency, and shortly thereafter, Libya was invaded, destroyed, and Gaddafi was killed. Now we have people in the United States who either haven't read their history or don't put much stock in the interpretation I've just suggested, or they're willing to run this risk and say, look, we're going to have gold and silver back here in Texas, and we're ready to fight. And it makes me smile. So does that ring your bell at all?
It does. I certainly wouldn't deny this is an important story, especially for what it could portend, not necessarily what it has already shown us, but absolutely. First, a matter of correction. If you're referring to the Executive Order 11110 that JFK signed on June 4th, 1963, about the basically the theory is that he signed this executive order that gave the authority to strip the Federal Reserve of its power to loan money to the United States federal government at interest, and that it was basically about issuing silver certificates or silver money again. That is, as far as I'm concerned, it's a myth, and it's been very well debunked.
I don't know that he ever said he was going to issue silver certificates again. But it was my understanding that he just said, we will print the money ourselves and spend it in circulation rather than borrow it from the Federal Reserve and then...
Well, the operative quotation that is usually taken from that executive order is it gave the Treasury Department the explicit authority to, quote, issue silver certificates against any silver bullion, silver, or standard silver dollars in the Treasury, end quote. So that's where this idea comes from. But there's an excellent page up on Freedom Force International, which is the website of G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island and one of the Federal Reserve's main critics, who points out the various flaws in that argument. And in fact, this was just part of something that was already ongoing before JFK, that there was these regular issues of silver certificates. And what JFK actually did with that executive order was give the head of...
Well, they still had silver certificates that were redeemable until 1968.
That's right, because the last...
They weren't printed.
Because the last issue...
They had silver certificates.
Because the last issue of those silver certificates took place under LBJ, and it was eradicated as a result of Executive Order 11110, which gave the head of the Treasury Department the ultimate final authority to end that practice, which had been going on regular issues since before that time. So what JFK did was not actually basically say he was going to print money for the benefit of the people or anything of that sort. What he actually did was end that practice of silver certificate issue. And so it's the exact opposite of what people try to claim about that. So I will, at any rate, I'll put up on my website when I post this conversation, I'll post a link to that JFK myth section of G. Edward Griffin's website so people can read about it. He goes into great detail. But the point of the Texas Gold Bullion Depository is extremely, I think, important for what it could be. And my questions with stories like this are always, why this and why now? And it's extremely interesting to think. I mean, think about the Texas secession movement, which comes and goes and we hear about it, and it's more or less political wrangling and talk for the most part. But if you were actually seriously thinking about seceding, this would really be one of those first steps that you would take. I mean, this is something that would at least...
foundation for having your own currency system.
Exactly right. Exactly. I mean, it is the first step.
One of the things you may not know is that there are three grids, electrical grids in the United States. And I don't know if you're familiar with this or not. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Maybe not.
There's an electrical grid east of the Mississippi, and there's another electrical grid west of the Mississippi, and there's a third grid that's Texas. Texas has its own independent electrical grid. Now, make that, I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is, but I guarantee it's one of the things where people sit back and say, it's interesting information in light of Texas secession talk from time to time. And now our own gold depository and our own electrical grid.
Right. Well, again, those
it's evidence.
Yeah, very real parts of the infrastructure that would be needed to make that even a viable political threat. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's going to happen or, you know, anytime in the near future or even anytime at all, but it does make that threat at least a little more realistic. And I think the other side of this is that when we look at the idea of this gold depository, I think you're right. I mean, it is important that to have something like that for American citizens in the United States. It is important to have that kind of resource so they don't have to, you know, store gold in Singapore or what have you. But when you say, I mean, Singapore, Canada, the United States, or Switzerland, or whatever, I mean, I don't think it's an or situation. I think it's an and situation. I think the people who can afford to do so and are able to do so should be storing gold and other forms of wealth offshore as well, in the event of the collapse that would make that actually really important. Because one can imagine a collapse scenario in the United States in which even the Texas Gold Depository would be very much in jeopardy, and you're going to want to try to protect that by diversifying not just what you store, but where you store it.
I agree with that, but, you know, people talk about storing their gold overseas in foreign countries because in case the United States government declares they want to seize our gold. From my perspective, if the United States government starts seizing privately owned gold within the United States, I'm not going to be the least bit surprised if other countries on the outside say, well, if they can do it, we can do it too. I don't see much reason to believe that gold is any more secure in a foreign country than it is within the United States. But at least given that I live down here and I feel like I'm not born Texan, but I've been here for 35 years, we might fight for this. You know, your gold might be safe just because we've got a depositor. They just might say, come and try to take it. Try to take our guns. Try to take our gold. Let's see how much you can get. Texas is an unusual place, so who knows? You know, half of the world is real, and half of the world is something like a myth, a fantasy, an illusion. And trying to figure out which is not, you know, it's full-time job trying to discern between the truth and the illusions. And we'll find out, well, of course, next year or so, we'll find out how much truth there is to the law that's backing up this Texas depository. It's a real law. I mean, the law is there, and I don't doubt that the story I've told you is basically correct, but well, how does it work out? You had some other stories. We're coming down. We've got 3 minutes before we take the break, but you said you had your own list of some incredible stories for this week, so why don't we start, you know, take one now before the break and take another one, two, however many you've got.
All right. Well, let's take the one that I think is on a lot of people's lips this week is the Greek crisis, which we've talked about many times before, but once again is coming to a very, very interesting head this week. There is a Eurogroup meeting that's going to be taking place in a few hours as we talk, Thursday, I believe, morning, European time. And it is going to be a meeting that at which the Greek finance minister will be present, and there will be negotiations or discussions about the next Greek payment to the IMF that's due at the end of the month, and their other debt payments. And all signs are that the Eurogroup is saying the ball is in Greek's court, and Greece is saying we're not going to do anything with the deal as it exists. We're not going to pay this. And the interesting update to this that I just saw is that a parliamentary committee that was formed back in April, that was convened by the speaker of the Greek parliament, has just come out to say that the debt that has been imposed on Greece and its residents by its creditors directly infringes on the human rights of Greeks and is, quote, illegal, illegitimate, and odious. So we have an official Greek parliamentary ruling calling this an odious debt, which is what we had talked about as some sort of distant political possibility earlier. They are now apparently officially doing that, and there's a fairly substantial report that they've just issued with chapters on how the debt system mechanism that's been imposed on them was created to actually further them get the country into debt, and that the loan conditions that have been imposed are part of a political agenda of premeditated and organized attack on the country and a violent, illegal, and immoral mission to shift private debt onto the public sector. Some pretty bold words from a parliamentary committee. So it seems like Greece is really digging in its heels this time. And that's why everyone is talking about the possibility of a Lehman weekend. But I think a Cyprus weekend might be more of the point here. And I think the Greek
Let's talk more about what kind of weekend we're may be coming up when we return from some commercials. James, I'm here with Jim Corbett from the Corbett Report, and we will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask, and this is Financial Survival. I'm talking to James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. And James was explaining that, if I understand correctly, the European Parliament has declared that the debt the government of Greece owes to its creditor is an odious debt, which means it doesn't have to be paid, it shouldn't have to be paid. And given that Greece, from my perspective, I speculate on this, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, Greece is already incapable of paying the debt. Now Greece has received moral authority not to pay the debt. You can bet the debt is not going to be paid. That's now a dead issue. The creditors aren't going to get any money, I am assuming, and that means they're not going to lend any more to Greece either. Both of them are going to go their way right now. There's no point to lending more money to Greece because you're never going to. The idea was, we'll lend you more money. You'll go into austerity so you can pay us back what you already owe us. That's dead. That's done issue. There's no more money coming to Greece, and Greece is not going to have to pay its debt. And the big surprise here is that we assumed that the battle between Greece and its creditors would be resolved by one side or the other. And it appears that it's been resolved by a third party. Coming out of the bushes. Nobody expected this to happen. Am I roughly correct?
In all counts, yes. In fact, again, just reading from the summary of this interesting document that just came out from the Greek Parliamentary Committee, they're on every single debt, they're basically calling it illegal and illegitimate. The IMF debt is illegal because its concessions breached the IMF's own statutes, according to this report. The ECB debt is illegitimate because it overstepped its mandate by imposing the application of macroeconomic adjustment programs via its participation in the Troika. And debts to the ECB are legitimate and illegitimate and odious, since the principal raison d'etre of the securities market program was to serve the interests of the financial institutions, allowing the major European and Greek private banks to dispose of their Greek bonds. And debts to the EFSF are judged illegal on the grounds that they violate treaties on the functioning of the European Union, while bilateral loans are seen as illegal because they violate the procedure provided by the Greek constitution, and illegitimate as well. So again, every single debt they are now repudiating, which is it's pretty amazing. If this proceeds, if this is not just some sort of bargaining tactic, if this is truly Greece's position at this point, then I will gladly, happily eat my words about Syriza and everything that they've done to this point. If they really are going to take this stand, it's an extremely gutsy move to take, and one with huge ramifications, not just for Greece in the Eurozone, but for the Eurozone entirely. Because think of, if Greece really does dig in their heels here, and this is their position, think of the ramifications of this for all of the other negotiations with all of the other people who are in that state of bailout or near bailout.
Spain,
right now.
Portugal,
exactly,
Ireland.
Right. It's the domino. I mean, this is a real domino situation where I think we could really see some other countries saying, hey, look at what Greece did. We're going to say the same thing. So huge ramifications if this does transpire the way people are saying it does. And the Greek people are getting prepared for it. I think we mentioned last month when the data came out that there was a Greek bank outflow of 5 billion euros in the month of April alone. That is 5 billion euros of withdrawals from the Greek banking system in April, which was up from 1.91 billion euros in March. I haven't seen the June figures yet, or the month-to-date figures, if there are any, but that's an exceptional amount, and there are anecdotal stories of Greek people with 10,000 euros stuffed under their mattress, literally or figuratively, as the case may be, but people are withdrawing large amounts of money in the event of some sort of Cyprus event where, you know, the banks close and there's a recapitalization and the depositors have to bail in. So we're seeing some very worrying signs, but some very big moves seem to be coming in the next week or so.
It's really quite astonishing, in part because, assuming the story is correct, and I assume the story is correct, but it's surprising because this has snuck up on everyone. Did anyone hear about the possibility of a decision like this?
I hadn't seen this covered to this point.
They maintain secrecy on this up until just the last 24 hours or whatever. I never called into it.
I'm assuming that the committee was known about since it was convened, but certainly the idea that they were going to come out with this, I haven't seen that before.
See, this to me poses a threat to the whole structure of the world. They're essentially saying, look, these people are too far and dead. It's wrong. You can't squeeze blood out of a stone or whatever, and you got to just let them go. If this catches on, it threatens the whole idea of currencies based on debt. It threatens the global debt system. And one of the things that I was going to ask you about that I'd intended to ask, I don't think Greece by itself, up until at least the last 20 minutes or so, I haven't thought that Greece by itself posed that much of a threat. You know, I know that there can be ramifications and domino effect and all that, but Greece by itself, whether it pays its debt or doesn't pay, it's not, the world is not going to come to an end. But I was wondering, just on the off chance that the world did come to an end, could Greece be blamed? Would they be a patsy? Could they be a patsy in the same sense that Lee Harvey Oswald claimed to be a patsy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. And
Could the triggers, could something happen in the next 10 days, 2 weeks where people, it's because the Greeks, they're the ones that made this all happen.
Right.
When actually it's a fiat monetary system and or,
and the predatory lending and all of that. Yes, exactly. And the Goldman Sachs book cooking and all of that. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what we should expect from all of this, if this does play out the way it seems to be playing out right now. And if it does lead to the cataclysm of the Eurozone going up in flames, there is no doubt that any and all economic hardship that result from it will be laid at the doorstep of Greece and their decisions here. It will, of course, I mean, all of the powers of the international mainstream media will be brought to bear on blaming the Greek people for this crisis. And who will be seen as the victims in all of this and the saviors, potentially? It will be the same, exactly, the same ECB, the same EFSF, the same Troika, the IMF. All of these people will be seen as the saviors, the victims, the people that, they were doing so well until Greece stepped up. So, of course, there's going to be propaganda galore to convince people that this idea of odious debt just cannot be countenanced. We cannot have this idea on the books because look at what will happen. And I have no doubt that if things play out, again, we don't know for sure, but if things do play out the way they're looking, there will be real, very cataclysmic economic ramifications for a lot of real people living in the Eurozone. And it's not all going to be happiness and sunshine. I don't think there is a happy sunshine conclusion to this at this point, but all of that pain is going to be blamed on the Greek.
It really is an astonishing story. I mean, I didn't think you could actually top the Texas story, but I guess you have.
Well, actually, I think I have another one that tops them both. This one is not pressing. It's not in the immediate future, but I think for long term, in terms of global geopolitics and economics, it is the game changer. We talked about last year the Holy Grail of gas deals between China and Russia that was signed last year to supply, I believe it was 18 billion cubic meters of natural gas a year between Gazprom and China through the Power of Siberia pipeline. And at that time, it was this $400 billion deal over the lifetime of the contract was going to be denominated in dollars. But it comes out that now, apparently, according to official sources, the deal has not been signed. I mean, the sales contract has not been signed. So Gazprom export CEO Elena Burmistrova just came out to say that since the deal is not signed, the currency of payment has not yet been determined. However, the Chinese side and the Russian side are discussing today and in intricate negotiations on the possibility of paying in yuan and rubles, which I think is a game changer, not in and of itself. Again, like the Greek situation, it's not just what's happening in Greece, it's the ramifications of this action, because on the global markets of energy exports, this one pipeline, in fact two pipelines, because there's another one that's in the works that will be similarly affected, but these two pipelines are not on the global scale that important, but as the sample of the example that can be set and the precedent that's being set by this, I think it is extremely important, because as we've talked about before, the last 30 to 40 years of the American dollar, the underpinning of that dollar has been the petrodollar. It's been the oil bursts denominated in dollars. That is exactly why the US dollar is the world reserve currency and has been for 40 years. Take that out of the equation, the US dollar cannot be the world reserve currency. There would be no reason for people to hold as much US dollars as they do. Again, it's just another paper cut, but I think this is a particularly important one and really could be, I think the historians of the future might look back at this as the end of the American world reserve currency system.
Well, it looks like we are in line for, you're talking about an important or big weekend. I'm not sure how fast this can impact.
Oh, it will take years, but I think this is the starting point.
You think when we say years, you're speaking about the Russian-Chinese
Yes.
oil deal where
yes.
they're going to trade in terms of yes. Chinese yuan rather than dollars?
Yes.
All right, I get that. Yeah, that we can talk about it today. It won't start happening to a significant degree for some time, who knows, 6 months, a year before it even begins. The impact, it's more psychological right now. But
exactly, yeah.
This other situation with odious debt as it applies to Greece, this is going to put the concept of odious debt on everybody's lips. For example, we have college graduates in this country that allegedly owe something like $1.2 trillion in college debt, which is roughly the same amount of money that's being held by China in U.S. bonds, debt instruments, whatever. People say, oh my gosh, China could sell all that at once, it would collapse the dollar. What happens if the college graduates get hold of this concept of odious debt and they say, we're not going to pay? And $1 trillion disappears because those debts are canceled. Is that possible?
It certainly is. I think it is. I think there, obviously there are certain special conditions for student loans, etc. But I think there's still, and especially over the last decade or so, when we've seen this explosion in student loan debt to the point where it has now surpassed credit card debt as the, I think, the number one source of debt other than mortgages in the United States. It's an extremely important thing. And of course, there is a very good case to be made that a lot of this, the loans that are made to students are under duress and in a manipulated market anyway, where obviously the market has been so skewed by government participation over the past few decades, as I think we talked about on this broadcast before. It's absolutely a situation where people are being more and more cornered into a place of accepting exorbitant loan deals in order just to get this education that they're told is necessary. So I think there would definitely be a case to be made. And yes, I think the setting of the political example of an actual country taking this stand on the international stage would be one heck of a precedent.
It's not just a country taking this stand. It's the European Parliament that's taking the stand. It's not Greece saying this is an odious
debt. Oh, it is Greece.
They're going to grab onto it. They're going to grab onto it like a bulldog grabbing onto a bone or something like that. But it's another authority.
Oh, no. In case I wasn't clear, it was the Greek parliament that issued that ruling. It was the Greek parliament.
My mistake. I thought you were saying the European parliament.
No. The Greek parliament.
That was my mistake. All right. I thought you were talking about the European parliament. Well, then, all right. Then this is...
If it was the European parliament, that would be pretty amazing, I must admit.
Yeah, all right. See, that's why I, oh my gosh.
Yes, okay.
My God, that's astonishing. Well, we've only got about a minute left, James. Do you have any more rabbits to pull out of
there? Other than that, what else needs to be discussed? Well,
I understand.
Yeah, it's huge. But, of course, we just saw the coming and going of another Bilderberg, on which the agenda of this year's conference included Russia, of course, was specifically a topic of conversation. But I have not seen any reports of any leaks of information coming out about what specifically was discussed. One could well imagine what they might have been discussing there, though. I still think it's interesting that this conference took place after G7, but ultimately it amounts to the same thing because, of course, all the participants will go home and start to enact whatever they discussed in their own way, as even the former Secretary General of NATO admitted in a radio interview a few years ago, that they set an agenda at Bilderberg and then they go back to their own home countries and start to implement that agenda, exactly as the conspiracy theorists have said for years and years and years. So I'm sure we'll see whatever was discussed there in the coming months, but it'll be interesting to see if any further info gets leaked out there.
Well, we'll look forward to discussing the Bilderbergers if we have more clear information next Thursday. In the meantime, have a good week, James. I always enjoy talking to you on the program. Folks, we are done, and we'll be back. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer, and James Corbett. Good night.